Gear's Weekly Tech Podcast. This is episode 136. This episode is brought to you by Amazon. Go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and buy your stuff that way. You know you're about to go buy a new GPU or something because the price is finally coming down. So go do that. Get yourself your 1080 Ti and then enter our link and hook us up a little bit. It helps us do the podcast and keeps things going at the website. Obviously with me today is Bob. What's up, Bob?
What's up, man?
Not much.
Just
enjoying the beautiful weather. Yeah,
yeah,
it's Tuesday afternoon.
It's nice out. You know, you want to get outside for a little bit here. I've been inside all day working on reviews, so I haven't really been out there. But looking through the window, it looks nice out there. So,
I walked from work to my truck and from my truck to my house, and it felt nice.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's good to not have cold weather. It doesn't even matter if it rains because I'm just happy that it's like warm. You know what I mean?
So nice.
Yeah. But then in like a month we'll be like, it's so hot. Like,
yeah, I'm not gonna complain.
Yeah.
It's not gonna happen this year.
Yeah, so good weather all around, but still a lot of cool tech stuff coming up and some really, really interesting stories this week. But we'll jump into our reviews to start things off. We have two reviews this week. The first one, you took a look at the Radeon Tech Orcus 240, which is their first all-in-one liquid cooling CPU cooler.
Yeah, I forgot I actually did that one. But well, you did. I'm like, wait, what did I do?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's their first, like, they have other, like, types of, like, water cooling things. This is the first, like, strictly all-in-one, though, no, assembly necessary. And it's basically, it's unique in that it's got an external pump that's built into the, tubing, so it's not a pump on the block design, and instead of having the pump there, it's actually got a flow meter built onto that pump into the pump housing space. But it's also not super unique because it's similar to a couple other units that we've seen. So the question I kind of had coming away from this is who's making these?
I've seen a couple companies. I know Enermax has one, and I think there's another one.
It's very similar to the Riven that I checked out earlier too.
Yeah, so I think I'm sure it's OEM'd from, you know, whoever's making it.
Somebody.
But
it's a decent cooler. You checked out their fans not too long ago, right?
The fans are, well,
the RGB fans.
These ones, I'm not sure which ones these ones are. But I have been testing two different sets of Radeon Tech fans, so.
I thought the fans were the best part, to be honest. The fans are pretty nice. The RGB function was odd for them. I don't know if that's probably not the fan, more the controller that it comes with, maybe even the remote that I used. But the fans were great. The performance was like, it was okay for a 240 millimeter cooler. Not really anything to write home about. Not expensive though either. This thing is only, I think it's right around $100. What did I say?
Yeah, right around.
Yeah, 103. And the only place I could find it available for sale in the U.S. too was Newegg, interestingly enough. But yeah, so it's $104 there. And I mean, for the price, it's decent performance. But there's actually I've done some 140 coolers that performed the same. So it's not. It just that external pump design might not be the best. It might be something within the pump. Also, looking at the flow meter, it really wasn't going very fast, which is, you know, that's kind of all relative. I don't know where the flow is coming from, but you can just kind of tell from that maybe the flow isn't real great on this thing. So for whatever reason, it was not a great performer. It didn't have any software to do anything with, let alone control the RGBs. And then the remote with it was, I mean, it didn't do much. We were like missing a color or something.
Yeah, so. You did say that it did have easy installation though, like one of the easiest.
Oh yeah, thanks for reminding me. Yeah, the bracket for this is great. You pass through, bolt on the back plate, bolt on the top plate, and then the cooler itself just has two thumb screws that bolt it. You just press it on and bolt right down, no issue. Nice. Super easy. So,
I guess that's one good thing to take out of this.
Yeah,
the whole thing.
Simple, and it's refillable, so like potentially has a longer life. I don't know if that's true or not. Really, I would think the pump would actually die before you had too much water loss, but I don't know. It was interesting, but I think at the end of the day, it's okay.
Yeah, I think one, it goes into the league of no software, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Performance, I mean, if you look at our graph on, what was it, page 4 of the review, you know, it falls below the median line of coolers that we tested. We have a shitload there. We have a bunch. We do at this point. You know, so I think that it's a good first entry. I think it needs some work. We talked about the remotes for the RGBs and how we had some issues there, and just like mediocre performance, no software. It can use some work. You know,
I just don't know how. Yeah, it's so questionable what it could actually be, because it's not the another thing about it is it's not the greatest quality of materials. Cheaper plastics. The base is claimed to be copper, but it's silver. And at that price range, I don't see them actually having nickel plating.
Yeah.
It's very unlikely. So it's probably an aluminum aluminum base, which is not going to perform like a copper base.
Gotcha.
Which is odd, because even other cheap coolers still have a copper base.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's a little weird, too. So I think we'll just put this one up into, like, you know, if you're looking to save some money this way, you know, and you like that design with the flow meter possibly, but I think that maybe, you know, again, this is their first one. We always say with any product, wait till the second revision.
Yeah, definitely.
So hopefully we'll see something, you know, in, you know, probably what Computex is in a month, probably like after that, towards holiday season, we might see something new. So I would definitely wait for that. But moving on from that, I took a look at a portable SSD, and I love these things. I travel a decent bit. If you're a photographer or you're somebody who's like working from a laptop, and especially if it's like an ultrabook, you don't have a whole lot of storage space. And if you're working with video especially, you want something that's fast, and you want something that's small and easy to carry with you. And I've reviewed a good amount of these over the past year. And this is SanDisk. This is their Extreme Portable SSD. It comes in, they just released a 2 terabyte now. So they have 2 terabyte, 1 terabyte, 500 gigabyte, and 250 gigabyte versions. And these are USB 3.1 Gen 2, USB Type-C, external drive, and this one is nice and small. It's like small enough to fit in your pocket, which I really like. You know, if you're again out on the go taking photos, taking video, you can just like offload your footage to this, you know, with your ultrabook or whatever it may be. Very fast speeds. It was one of the fastest drives I've tested out of like the five portable SSDs that I have tested. Really great speeds. Like, you know, the rated speed is 550 read and I believe 500 write. And all my tests were just about right there. Really good performance.
Just behind that Samsung T5, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, so it did beat out the Samsung T5 in some of the tests.
Okay.
Which is really good, because like that Samsung T5 is like the quintessential portable SSD. Besides that, it's pretty much like, you know, any external USB Type-C drive. It does have IP55 rating, which means it's like it can take a splash and it can take some dirt and dust, but it's not like an IP 67, which is completely waterproof. And the connector where the connection goes is not covered, so I'm sure that splash rating doesn't pertain to that section.
That's probably why the splash rating is so low, because you can actually submerge it.
Yeah, so but it's a nice little drive. It has like a rubberized coating on it, which is cool too, and it allows you to like easily pick it up and carry it with you, and so you won't drop it.
Looks rugged, but still small.
Yeah, it's very small. It comes with their secure access software, which gives you 128-bit AES protection, so you can password protect your drive and kind of create like a vault partition that's only accessible with that password. 3-year warranty, and again, the 1 terabyte, which I reviewed, is $312.99, which is pretty much on par with the other drives in this category.
Yeah.
Honestly, didn't find a single thing wrong with it. It's not... even a lot of people are complaining that it's not, like, completely waterproof. It's not advertised as their, like, a crazy rugged drive that can withstand anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is an SSD, so you can throw it off the ground and nothing's going to happen to it.
Right.
Because there's no moving parts or anything like that. I think it's fine. Like I said, everything considered, I think it's a great drive. And I think if SanDisk were going to come out with one that's going to be like a crazy waterproof rugged drive, they will. You know.
Yeah, and I think you'll gain some bulk from that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So it's just staying in a small form factor. What do you think? Because to me, on a professional level, it looks slightly less professional than the Samsung drive.
Yes.
In that it is rubberized. It's got the orange little ring in it. Being like that, it's in the same price range as a competitor for that. Do you think that's a smart move to go with this direction with the rubberized coating?
I actually like the rubberized coating, just okay. Because it's like easy to pick up, and if you're holding it, you're not going to drop it. Like, say you're grabbing it out of your bag on the side of a cliff or whatever.
Is that what you're gonna do?
No, I mean, but you know what I mean. Like, you're not. It makes it easier to pick up. I do like that. The Samsung drive has an all metal casing.
Right.
You know, I don't think with these drives, how small they are, and they're not like sitting on your desk, right? They're not, they're just, I mean, more or less for like using footage and whatever. I don't think the design of it makes a difference to me. I'm more concerned about performance, especially video editors need, you know, they're concerned about performance. And if you're offloading SD cards full of 4K content or something like that, you don't want it to take years to transfer your data. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think that their other extreme drive, like they have another portable SSD that's a little bit older. It's a USB 3.1 Gen 1 drive. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more professional looking, and that one's actually fully waterproof.
Interesting.
Yeah, so this one, I think this is more like prosumer type, just like the Samsung one is. It's like people, again, who are traveling, who are working with 4K video, and they need a fast transfer speed, and they need the capacity. Because, again, these Ultrabooks, which most people, like when I travel, I have an Ultrabook. I'm not, you know,
not putting 4K content on there.
Yeah, and like my drive is, I think it's only 256 gigs. So, I mean, you have a Windows installation, then I have like Adobe, you know, Creative Cloud on there, and then I don't have a lot of space after that, especially... again, working with 4K content or even like raw images, I mean, that's going to fill up quickly.
Right.
So this is like an essential to have. All these drives are great. I would recommend both of these drives. I wouldn't necessarily recommend one over the other, honestly. They both have the same feature set. They're both pretty much the same speed. It's just like what company you like better, possibly. You know what I mean?
Right, you're right. Which design appeals to you more, even.
Yeah, SanDisk as well as Samsung hasn't really told us like what's inside these. You know what I mean?
As far as flash
and the controller and everything like that. So you don't know, and you don't want to break the drive to crack one open, obviously. So like I said, those are the two ones I would recommend the most out of the test set that we have, just for the fact that. One, they're huge name brands, right? So you know the reliability is there. I believe they both have a 3-year. I don't know if the Samsung has a 5-year. I don't remember. But that might be the only difference, really. Performance is pretty much the same. The size is pretty much the same. Just like I said, the outer casing is different. Definitely awesome drive. Highly recommend it. Just great. You know, great if you're working with an Ultrabook and you need that extra space and that speed. I mean, it's like I said, it's one of the fastest drives, portable drives we tested. So,
cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, you can totally edit straight off that thing. So that's nice.
Yeah. So that's what I've done. So, yeah.
Really, as long as your Ultrabook supports it, of course.
Yeah.
Definitely. Got to have that Gen 2.
Yes. So that moves us on to Case Mod Friday, which is, of course, where we cover a case mod or build. It's been done in the community, and this time we have a build called Red Devil, and it's from 2H Mods, who I don't think we featured before. And this is a sort of a unique and interesting build. And I'm not specifically sure if this case is like completely custom made because I can't tell. And there wasn't a whole lot of information provided. These guys, these modders don't sometimes don't provide a whole lot of information because it does look like a custom case to me.
I want to say it's not fully custom.
Okay.
The looking at the exterior of the chassis, the bends look machine done.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I do see that.
So, I would say that they probably started with some sort of. Almost looks like a Li and Li.
Maybe it is. If the one photo, it's beside a Li and Li case that sort of looks the same.
It's hard to see though.
Yeah, it's like there's no information.
The photos are not great either.
Yeah.
Looks like they're taken at an event.
But one thing I do like is that obviously, like, the entire front of the case is a res with red coolants, and it's lit up too, which I think looks awesome. And then I believe it's like it's filled up so like the water's pouring into it, right? If I'm seeing that right.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's not like fully filled.
Yeah,
I like it's got to be nickel backplating. Like that looks on that front block. That looks great.
Yeah.
Because usually it's just left clear acrylic there.
Yeah, so I think that's really cool as well. The color, it's silver, black, and red, so that's why it's called Red Devil. Yeah. Lots of water cooling. It's so hard to see. There's only one photo that is hard tubing. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So great, great hard tubing there. And it does look like it's slightly frosted, although it could be the photo because these photos aren't great.
I think it's frosted.
Yeah, so really cool there. It looks like he has a custom, the two reservoirs that are in the case, that looks like a custom like mounting that he built into there, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And if you look at all the tubing goes into a channel that's built into the back tray of the case, which is cool. I really like that too.
That's cool.
Yeah. Single graphics card, but I like the way he did the like the way the tubing comes off the graphics card. It's different. It's not like the normal, I don't know.
Yeah, kind of. He elbows it away.
Yeah, he elbows one like in towards the board and one out towards the board, or out from the board.
Away from the board. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty cool actually.
Yeah, really cool. I like it. It's not a whole lot of wiring. His wiring is really good in this. At least from the side shot, you don't really see a whole lot of it.
Mostly minimal.
Yeah, so it's a really really cool build. And again, I think this is the first time we featured something from this 2H mod. So we'll definitely have to. You know, keep an eye out for what else.
More of their stuff. Yeah. Where's he from?
Let's see. On his Facebook page, it doesn't say.
About.
I guess where. Well, it says on Facebook where he like posted stuff in Poland. Yeah. So I guess there.
I was gonna guess from the he's got Be Quiet power supply in it that he was from Europe somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, so like I said, very cool stuff. If you go on his Facebook page, he has a few of his other builds, which are also really good as well. So definitely check it out.
Cool.
Of course.
Build there to keep on your radar.
Yes, yes, for sure. It is the beginning of the month, the beginning of May. So that means worst PC setups, which is, of course, where we show you some just really horrible setups of people who like to post them on Reddit. And we picked 20 from the past month and kind of show them off. It's kind of just a funny thing to check out and something we do every month, so you guys can check that out. This month wasn't like incredibly horrible ones. I mean, we've seen some really bad ones in the past, but
not so much filth so far.
Yeah, not a whole lot of filth this month. It's more like moving or just people who like just don't clean your desk off that much, or like they're in their bedroom or living room or something.
What's this guy's got? He's got like a 19-inch Acer monitor, and then above it he's got a 18-inch Samsung, and then beside it he's got a vertical. You can't even see what it is. Something vertical, like another 19-inch, and then he's got it's all running off of an IBM. Laptop that's had the monitor removed.
Yep.
What?
That's yeah. What? You see, like it. These are so great to see, like what length people go to like make a different setup or like add monitors. Like I remember when like I started doing like more than one monitor. I'm like, how can I add more? I need more screens. These are really funny to check out. Just people who they need to get on their PC. They need to game. Most of it's gamers. I mean. they need to get on their PC to game, and they'll do anything to have just have a setup anywhere they can kind of fathom having one. So very funny, definitely worth checking out this article. So yeah, that brings us to news, and one of the biggest news stories of this past week is that NVIDIA, who implemented their GeForce Partner Program probably a couple weeks ago, maybe a month at most.
Yeah, we talked about it like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, maybe a couple weeks ago. Let's see.
Maybe it was longer.
March 12th, so yeah, like a month ago.
Jeez. Time.
Yeah, so maybe a month ago, they have canceled the GeForce Partner Program.
Yeah, entirely canceled it.
So just give you guys a quick rundown. The GeForce Partner Program was a program for their add-in card partners, say like Gigabyte, Aorus, MSI, Asus, all that kind of stuff. Where NVIDIA, if you're part of this program, you get all these benefits from NVIDIA. And the whole idea behind the program, according to NVIDIA, was to help gamers select the best graphics card. and there was a lot of weird wording in the program, and it was pointed out by Kyle Bennett over at Hard OCP was how anti-competitive the GeForce Partner Program was. One of the biggest things was that if you're part of the program, your brand or your gaming brand cannot sell AMD GPUs under that brand. That was the big thing. That does not scream give gamers the best choice of what they want. And over the past couple weeks, we've seen companies completely delist AMD graphics cards on their websites. I believe Asus was the first to do it, and I think that was followed by Aorus and MSI, I believe, as well. And we even saw Asus go as far as to create a new gaming brand called Ares, I don't, you know, Ares, which we covered, was it last week or the week before?
It was last week we were just talking about.
That was AMD specific. I don't know if that's going to continue now. We're not really sure.
You've already created a brand now. You put money into it.
So for that reason, and then like big OEMs, like, you know, we see these smaller companies like Asus has become, you know, but most of these, they're not a huge profit for NVIDIA. The big profit is like the OEMs, like Dell and HP and all that. And those companies said, no, we're not joining the program. So like any of like the, you know, Dell makes Alienware, like, and even the Dell, like the Dell gaming gaming desktops and laptops would have to be NVIDIA only. And you knew that big companies like Dell would be like, no, like, we want our customers to have a choice.
And you're still going to give us good pricing and availability.
Yeah.
Or we'll just not buy your stuff.
And there was the big circumstance of people thinking, okay, well, this is incredibly anti-competitive. They're going to get investigated and be shut down.
and go
through this big thing. So, on Friday, this past Friday, NVIDIA pulled the plug on the GeForce Partner Program. And they didn't issue a press release. They just put it on a blog post. And you guys, we have the whole blog post in entirety in the article. It says, you know, that the GPP had a simple goal, was ensuring gamers know what they are buying and can make a clear choice.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, and it says, with GPP, we asked our partners to brand their products in a way that would be crystal clear. All the stuff, they don't really...
No one had any confusion, NVIDIA.
Yeah, and, you know, they like, don't apologize for it being anti-competitive or, like, seeming anti-competitive at all in this blog post, which is pretty astonishing, given all of the claims and all of this stuff. I think it's great. I honestly wasn't a fan of it, just for the fact that if I like a certain gaming brand which has been around for a while, say like Asus ROG, and I'm somebody who has an ROG graphics card, an ROG motherboard, ROG components, but I'm an AMD guy at heart. Now I won't be able to buy an AMD graphics card.
Yeah, now you're gonna have a mismatch. You'll have your ROG board, but you won't have your ROG card.
Yeah, so it was like, that's the thing that, you know, and like forcing, not, it was never said you had to, but it was basically said, if you don't take AMD cards off these brands, we're not gonna,
they can't say straight up that they're not going to, but they said, oh, it's just not gonna be available to you. Good luck. Yeah.
So, I really like that the backlash, Kyle from Hard OCP did a great job of really bringing this to light. He has a huge voice in the industry, obviously, and all the other sites that covered it, and you know, obviously us talking about it, but even like the community coming together and being like, this is like NVIDIA, like you're supposed to be the good guy here, like you're not supposed to screw over your consumers.
And honestly, you really feel like you need another leg up on AMD.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because you don't need this. Like, you don't need that at all.
You are dominating the market for now. But, like, you don't... You definitely... AMD is not your threat, right?
Exactly.
And there's no confusion amongst consumers as far as, like, what they're getting. It's clearly labeled what you're buying. You're not... No one's confused whether they're getting an AMD card or an NVIDIA card. They're entirely different, regardless of the subset brand that they're getting. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. So farewell to the GPP. It's good to see that even a big company like NVIDIA can be brought down by all of us consumers. So not brought down, but this program brought down.
Another NVIDIA program to be retired.
Yes. But talking about NVIDIA and something you might be excited about.
Doesn't mean I'm not going to buy their stuff.
Yeah, of course not. It looks like we could see a summer launch for NVIDIA's next generation GPUs. This is really exciting because we've been waiting for a long time for the next generation GPUs from NVIDIA. And this all kind of came to light if you kind of read in between the lines, because that's kind of what I did for the story, is that on the Overclockers UK forums, an official Gigabyte UK notebook rep confirmed that next generation mobile GPUs will launch towards the end of the year. He was asked if the GTX 1080 would be an option for their Aorus notebooks. And he said that there are no plans to upgrade the Aorus notebook family until the next generation GPUs arrive. So if these next generation mobile GPUs are arriving towards the end of the year, typically almost every NVIDIA launch is a desktop GPU, which would filter down to mobile. So based on that timeline, it looks like, based on my assumptions, we'll see an announcement at Computex with availability later in the summer.
They want to get them in the hands of consumers. They got to get some testing. They got to get a wide range of systems running these so that they can work on notebook stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that you could see an announcement at Computex or a preview at Computex with a release towards mid-August to gear up for holiday season. That's my guess. You could take this however you want it. You could see an announcement at Computex with availability 3 weeks later, which is typical, and then you could see mobile in end of August, early September, which would be a perfect timeline.
Getting notebook out and completely available by school's time next fall would be pretty perfect for them. Yeah. So,
well, or getting it just available for holiday season. I didn't even think about that. Because holiday season's huge. Everybody's buying new things. Yeah. So having that available. But again, this is not confirmed.
It's happening.
But we would expect something like that to happen. Especially, you know, our next story is there might be some heat coming on.
I think they're suddenly in a hurry.
There's some heat coming on to NVIDIA, which would say that NVIDIA should launch before the end of the year with something. Because it looks it looks like Intel could be launching a GPU at CES 2019. CES has always been the big show for Intel when it came to CPU parts. I've been there for multiple launches at CES. So it looks like, according to the story from Tweaktown, Intel has been working pretty much over the past 2 years on their GPU technology. We've talked about the recent hires of Raja Koduri, who was the head of the Radeon Technologies Group, Chris Hook, who ran basically all the GPU marketing over there, and then Athlon and Ryzen CPU architect Jim Keller, all from AMD. And it looks like there's going to be something shown towards the end of the year with a huge announcement being placed on CES 2019, which of course is in January. I don't know if we'll see a consumer part. We'll see a AI accelerator type deal. I would assume the AI accelerator would come first.
Yeah, similar to NVIDIA, where we generally see a professional version of the card first, really of the chip first.
Yeah. So, but that's exciting. That's something to look forward to. We go to CES every year, so that would
be. Yeah, we might actually get something cool.
Yeah.
It's been a while since a major tech launch has happened at CES.
Yeah, a big one like this. They've been kind of spread out over different events, and so it will be cool to see if that's the case. We'll have to see, but it looks, I mean, by all indications, by mid next year, we'll have a third player in the GPU market, consumer market. Yeah. So that's awesome.
I think NVIDIA is going to want as much time with the 11 series on the market as they can before Intel shows up.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm super excited for that. I think it's going to be another like great time for the computer industry and all that. So just have another player come in such a massive industry is going to be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
So talking about Intel, they have retired their Kaby Lake X processors. If you remember, these were the quad core high end desktop parts that were released just a year ago. The Core i5-7640X and the Core i7-7740X. We actually reviewed the 7740X. And these parts, when they came out, I think the biggest thing is they were trying to match up with AMD on like having a price for everybody in their high-end line, right?
Yeah, I guess.
But, you know, meanwhile, you have 10, 12... 16, 18, 18 is the highest, right? 18 core parts throughout this lineup. And the cost of motherboard, plus these didn't give you the full PCI Express lanes. It was like, the only thing that we talked about when we reviewed this was the only reason you'd buy this was until like the other high-end parts came out, because Intel did a staggered release where the 10 core was the highest, right? Yeah. At launch, and then like, 4 months later, we got like the I think it was like 12, 16, 18 or something like that. I forget.
It took a while for the 18.
Yeah. So these two are being retired. They'll reach end of life status, which already happened yesterday. The end of life is May 7th, 2018. Retailer, suppliers, and OEMs can still order the processors up to November 30th this year, with the last shipments going out on May 31st of next year.
RIP. The chip that had no purpose, now it does not exist.
I have one though, so I feel pretty pumped that I like have this, that it's like already retired, you know?
Yeah, the shortest lived series in existence for Intel.
You think that is? It probably is.
It probably is. There was no point for it. It's for all intents and purposes, it's consumer level part.
Yeah.
Made for high-end desktop motherboard. As a placeholder, yeah, that makes sense. Like you were saying, also maybe for some reason you just need lanes. So yeah. Although weren't these handicapped on lanes too?
Yeah, they were handicapped on lanes. I think there was only 16 total. I don't remember. It's been a while. Obviously, it's been a year. But
yeah, no, you're right. It is 16. It's right on the side of that box.
Yeah. So
So no real reason then.
Yeah, like I said, the only reason was if you wanted to jump on high-end desktop and you're just like waiting for another chip. That was like the reason.
Yeah, like you had to get your computer going.
Yeah.
But you really wanted that 18 core.
Yeah. So yeah. So like I said, RIP.
Yeah. Dude, whoever, I want to know how many of the i5s they sold. Because that part is pointless.
Yeah.
Four core, no multi-threading. What?
On a high-end desktop.
On high-end desktop. Where
you really want multi-threading because, I mean, you're doing game design, video editing, audio engineering.
You want as many threads going as you can.
Yeah, you want as much stuff going as you can. So yeah. But yeah, that brings us to hard drive stuff. And this really cool... Backblaze is doing, we talked about like their 2017 reliability, and this is all standard hard drives, but it's cool to see because if you're building a NAS or even building out like a data center, I mean, even this gives you a great look at hard drive reliability, and this is for Q1 of 2018, and they list all the drives there, and you guys can go through and kind of look. They have a lot of drives and the failure rates and everything like that.
There's so much to read into it, and it can mean nothing.
Yeah.
But it can mean a lot, too. Like, you probably don't want that that third from the bottom Seagate that has an enormously high failure rate.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's good to look at this and kind of see, you know...
Are these just drives? We just have product numbers. Are these just drives that came out in Q1, or just drives they were testing in Q1?
I believe it's just drives they were testing in Q1, but they're all like available drives, I believe.
Yeah, I'm just curious because this list is quite parsed down from the full year list.
Yes, yes,
so it's a much smaller selection.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure these are just, their test set or whatever they're running. But again, it's good to see. One thing you notice is like the HDST helium filled drives. They have really low failure rate, which is good. But then, like I said, take a look at this article. There's a lot in there. You know what I mean? Like all the failure rates of larger drives are like really good compared to like the lower terabyte drives, which is interesting. So yeah,
and man, there's so much to try to like pull to tease from this information, but again, it's like, man, it could be true, it could not be true. A lot of just theorizing based on this information.
Yeah, but it's like I said, it's interesting. Yeah, to check out. And again, if you're building a NAS, this is something you might, you know, like a like as any NAS, I mean, this is good to look at.
It's the best you can do other than going in blind, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. So also we have two case launches this week. In one case we saw
two cool ones, actually.
Two very cool ones. One we saw at CES. The other one we saw and we've reviewed, but it's not the version. So we'll talk about the first one, which is Inwin's A1. And I was in love with this case at CES.
Yeah.
Mini ITX, really sleek design, both available in black and white versions. It comes with a base that is a clear acrylic base that you set the case on that has there's fans in the bottom of the case that illuminate this base, which just gives off this really cool effect. Really, really awesome. And Inwin,
is that what it is? I don't
yes, that is what it is. And Inwin loads this with the smaller SFX power supply, so you don't have to worry about that. It's like you get your mini ITX board, you get whatever cooling solution you're going to put in this, you get your memory, you get your graphics card, and you're good to go. And your like M.2 or whatever.
And by cooling solution, you mean basically a really small tower.
Yeah, I believe...
You're not getting much else in here.
Yeah, we talked about maybe, but like you couldn't even do like something below. And that's
you'd have to really mod it, and which would basically kill that whole white effect.
Yeah, but the it is such a sleek case, and the one cool thing about it too is that on the top it has a Qi charger, so that's a wireless charging, so you can set your phone on there. It is just really, really cool. And I love this case at CSI. We actually, in our post, I put the video in there too of us going over it. Just an awesome case. Yeah, it's awesome.
I can't wait for the first water-cooled build.
Yeah.
I'm searching now.
Yeah, I don't think that's
available. I don't think you're going to... I don't think they've given anyone
that product yet. But yeah, it's not... I don't even think it's out just yet, but it will be available in mid-May, probably like 15th, 16th this month. So okay. Stay tuned. If you're looking to do a mini ITX build, I would highly recommend this case. It's awesome.
Yeah, I wonder what price it's going to come in at. It's probably going to be much more than you think.
You have to think... One, it has the power supply. So you have 600 watt power supply in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know what the configuration would be with fans. I don't think there is going to be.
It doesn't look like it comes with anything.
Yeah, so like
you... Well, other than the two base fans, right?
Yeah.
Or does it not even?
I'm not even sure.
Because those are very specific fans. Those are 10 millimeter fans?
I'm not sure.
Based on how much room is actually available in the bottom of that case?
Yeah. So we'll have to see. But again, you have to figure in 600 watt. I think we do have the price that was listed.
On anyone's site?
No, when we asked them.
Hold on. Oh, yeah, we did. We did probably have an estimate.
I'm finding it. $139.
Oh, okay.
And the one with the one with the Qi charger is $20 more.
Okay.
So that's not bad. I would definitely pay that for this.
I mean, it's yeah, but it's definitely more than you would guess for a case that's like this is tiny.
Like, yeah,
tiny, but it's, not. It's like luxury though.
Yeah, yeah. As a lot of N1 cases are. So, yes. So yeah, definitely stay tuned for that case. I'm excited for it. And then we go to Corsair, who launched the RGB version of their Spec Omega. We reviewed the Spec Omega not that long ago. Good case. It's a good case. It's different looking. It's not super high end. It's not anything crazy, but it's cool. It has tempered glass
side panel. Very much a gamer's case.
Yeah. Tempered glass side panel, and then part of the front is actually tempered glass as well. There's a little section right there.
Yeah, that little
sliver. The RGB version... gives you two of the HD120 RGB LED fans, which we also reviewed, which are awesome. Those are individually programmable
things. Accessible, yeah.
Yeah, and this comes with the RGB strip in the front, which has 54 RGB LEDs in it.
That looks great. If the photo matches actual performance.
Yeah.
Or whatever you'd call that.
And you get the Corsair Lighting Node Pro, which is a digital RGB controller. So you control everything. And I believe that Node Pro has like extra slots, so you can connect more stuff, not just what's already connected
to it. I hope so, yeah.
So all of that, yeah, actually it does if you look at the picture.
Yeah.
Looks like you get four more. You get four more, so that would pretty much cover the rest of the fans in the case for the most part.
Yep.
Two at the top, two at the front.
And then you plug that into your motherboard?
I would think, right? Yeah, it connects to your motherboard via USB.
Yeah.
I think. But anyways, yeah, so you can control this with their software. Everything goes into Q now. IQ, sorry. Not just Q, it's IQ now. it's IQ now. So you get all of that, and the price goes up a little bit. This is $139 or $149, which I'm okay with based on everything that you get, because the fans themselves are $80 for a pack of three.
That's expensive.
They're expensive fans.
It's not that expensive, I guess.
Yeah, it's
how was the actual performance? What are they rated at?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I'm okay with that. I'm okay because again, you're not only getting RGB fans, but you're getting software to control it that works well. And everything's and it's all wired for you. You get the controller, which is incredibly important. That allows all that to happen. I'm okay with the price. And it comes in both black and white versions. I like it. I'm a fan.
Okay. I'll give it to you.
RGB stuff's not cheap, man. I did this RGB build. It was rather expensive. but yeah, I mean...
I hear you.
You have to...
$150 is... I want to say you used to get more case features for that kind of money.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Let me see how much the normal Spec Omega is.
I'm hoping it's like 1 to 110.
Yeah, so Spec Omega, which it has a clear, like down the front, it has a clear white thing, and it doesn't come with any lighted fans, it's on sale. But it's normally $99, but it's $89 on sale on Amazon. Okay.
That makes sense.
This one, the spec or the RGB is $149. So you're paying $50 for
two fans and a light strip.
For the fans, light strip, and the controller. So all of that stuff would cost more than $50.
Would it?
Yeah. Okay. We can look it up if you want.
I guess if you're going with Corsair specific stuff, then yeah.
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 Because again, it has to be so it all links up.
Yeah.
Like the Node Pro.
It is integrated and installed for you.
Like the Lighting Node Pro. Holy, that's expensive. It's $56. it comes with the light strip, though.
Okay.
Yeah. So with the light strip with a controller for it. So and this one.
They gave you RGB fans instead of
free. Yeah.
Because remember, you are trading in a couple of their decent fans.
So
get a little value back.
So. Four light strips, which aren't long, like the smaller ones.
Okay.
Plus the three HD 120s. Okay. Plus the fan hub and like everything that you get in this case by itself sold on Amazon is $130.
Which is just shy of the price of this case.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Well, plus one fan.
Well, you get one extra fan. You get one extra fan there. So, I mean. Take $30 bucks off, even though the fans are like $20 a piece, but like you don't even like it's a I'll send you the link so you can check it out. You're getting some value there. I think a case looks great. I think this is a case that's like made to have RGBs in it just for the nature of its design. And the like the user base that it's aimed at just with everything, you know what I mean?
Oh, it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's simple. That you don't have to deal with installing strips and getting all that stuff stuck right. Because that can actually be a hassle, rather if you don't realize it. Those strips can be a total pain to get stuck.
Oh, I know. So definitely, if you're looking for a new case and you get, like I said, $150, I would say it's worth it. You get everything good to go. It's all wired for you, too. All the fans are wired and everything, so. Yeah, I'd get the white one, I think. Maybe. Oh, I gotta go back and look again now. White or black?
Obviously, that's your choice.
Well, like, I guess I would say black. Yeah, because the white one has a black interior, where the black one has it's like all black. So, yeah, I'd go black with like a black motherboard.
The white just contrasts too sharply. Like, it's not enough white. And it's not accented anywhere but on those exterior panels. So.
So, definitely check that out. And we have one more thing. That's one more release this week. And EK released some limited edition Supremacy Edge water blocks. And I did this story for you because I figured you'd be all into these.
That's cool.
They have 2, 4, 6 different ones. And they'll be making 100 pieces of each one. Just something different. They have this really cool. Well, a couple of them have like different color designs on them that you typically wouldn't see.
Yeah, and you get two versions. You get the clear acrylic and then the acetal, and then you get the different colored options on those.
And they have like this cool 3D polygon design. I don't know. You have to look at the pictures, guys.
Yeah, kind of.
But these are
what they call it. They called it something funny. EK is a funny company.
Yeah. They're really cool. I think that these would be like awesome to add to a build that you're using these colors in. And I'm sure if you're using all EK parts, like the actual colors should line up perfectly with other parts color because they're using the same color. So, 100 units of each. So if you're looking to pick one up, definitely pick one up. They look awesome. I think they look really cool.
Yeah, I thought they were really neat. Looking closely at them, though, I'm not in love with the different color options. I felt like they're kind of boring.
It's kind of boring, and it's like the same color design. So you have like black and white, or black and silver, black on black, clear on silver and black, and then like, yeah, black and red, which are like the typical, like, normal colors that you see. Remember they had that other special edition one that was gold, though? Yeah, the gold and black one was awesome. Give me the gold one
for sure.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah.
But still, this is cool. It's cool to see, like, you know, water cooling has come so far that, like, we're getting special edition water blocks. Like, you know, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, check those out if you would be interested. And
this would probably be about $130.
Yes, yes. But I would say if you're doing a build, that can just, set it off.
Yeah. If you're in one of those color schemes, for sure. Yes. Plus, it's one of the better performing blocks on the market. So
it is. It is. EK always for a while now they've been one of the top performers. Oh, yeah. So that brings what we have coming up this week and into next week, because we do these podcasts on Tuesday and post the podcast either Tuesday night or Wednesday. So we have, I didn't finish it, I'm getting there, is the Synology DisStation DS418 Play. We talked about this last week. It is a 4-bay NAS, and the biggest thing is this one's called the Play, and what it does is that it allows you to transcode 4K H.265, H.264 video and stream it to your device. So if you have like a Fire TV stick, which is not capable of doing that, to actually transcoding the footage, you know, when you download it off Netflix, it's already transcoded for you. Yeah. So this does that. If you have native 4K footage on your hard drives, you can transcode it to a little device like that. And it just makes it so you can pretty much stream this to any device that allows streaming. It can be a smart TV. It can be like a Fire TV stick, a Chromecast, whatever. This will be able to do it. So definitely stay tuned for that review. Synology does great stuff. So pretty excited to tell you guys about that. And I'll be taking a look at another monitor from Viotech. They were introduced to us when we did their GN32Q. I'm taking a look at their GN27D, and this one's much more gamer centric as far as its design. Looks really great. It's a 27-inch VA panel, 144 hertz, 1440p, which is like ideal for gaming. It has
1800 R curve.
Yeah, 1800 R curve. Looks good. It doesn't have all the crazy features as far as like no USB, no audio pass through. I don't even know if
that's fine.
There's no speakers on it. There's no like crazy
save OSD. Me that money. Save me that money. No big deal.
Yeah, enhancements. It does have FreeSync. So you have AMD FreeSync on there if you have that, which is
so you won't use that because you don't own an AMD card. Of course.
Yeah, exactly. and it does have the slim bezel design on the sides and the top, which I like. That's on the current Viotech. The one we already reviewed, and it's $369.99, which is a really good price.
That's a really good price
for that spec, for curved 27-inch 1440p 144 hertz. That's like very good price. So we'll see how it lasts. I was really impressed with the 32Q. Came to me, no issues. Gamed on it, was great.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Good. No, go ahead.
No, you finish here.
I was just going to say, if you're looking to maybe put that extra 200, which like, or 200, 150 to 200, that this is like off the, you know, your name brand. If you want to put that towards the graphics cards, maybe go from like a 1070 to a 1070 Ti or a 1070, 1080, something like that.
That's the smart move right there.
Yeah. That's kind of what you're going to do with this. So I kind of like that. But we'll have to see. I haven't completely finished testing it, but it's good so far.
My experience with monitors, and I'm sure you've had the same, is that you can pay a lot of money for the name brand on a monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it matters. A lot of times it doesn't. A lot of these panels are made in the same exact place, so it kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah.
A lot of it, it just comes down to, you know, read your reviews, check around. See, I'm going to guess the colors on this are not as amazing as they could be, just based on price. Mm-hmm. But, you're gaming, like, it's probably going to be, you probably won't notice, it'll be just fine. You're not editing, like, professional photos, you're not making money off of it. So,
yeah, so I think
save your dollars and put your money where the performance is.
If this was a difference between a 1070 and 1080,
100%.
Yeah, we'll take it. So, stay tuned for that. That'll be towards the end of the week here. And then I'll be taking a look at, we're talking about the RGB fans from Raging Tech. I'm checking out their
those are the different ones.
Ones. So these are the Auris 12 RGB. And these are, I believe, their first ones.
Okay.
Because they have a bunch now. I went to the. I guess they have.
They have a lot of products, actually.
Yeah. So this is their first iteration of RGB fans. I haven't even installed them yet, so I'm not sure as far as like what we all get and like the. I don't believe their software. Okay. It's just based on the looks of it. They give you RGB. We'll see how all that goes. I haven't got into these that much, but we'll definitely. And these are 120 millimeter fans. I have three of them. So
okay, cool.
So it's a three kit with the controller. So we'll see what they look like when I get them installed and everything like that. And you took a look at something that, like, again, people take for granted. I think when you're like building your setup, or like you just redid your basement. Yeah. And Sumo Lounge, who we worked with in the past on a bunch of different gaming chairs, they sent you their Gamer Micro Suede, which is not necessarily a chair. It's more of it's a beanbag.
It's a beanbag for sure. There's no shape to it. A lot of their other products have a specific chair shape. This one's not. This is like straight up when you were a kid and you jumped in a beanbag. That's what this is.
Gotcha.
But it's obviously it's on a much higher level than that. Course, so
yeah,
the review will come out soon.
Soon, hopefully tomorrow.
Hopefully tomorrow, and you can find out the differences.
Yeah, and see if you liked it or if you didn't like it. So
yes.
So yeah, that brings us to the end here. Of course, at the end of each podcast, we talked if we did anything cool, played any video games, saw any movies. So did you do anything like that?
Okay, I've got a good one. I did a few things, but I've got a really interesting one. Have you heard, is it The Rain? So Netflix, you know, it's always advertising stuff to you. Yeah, uh-huh. It's The Rain. And we got this, and on mine, I got this show called The Rain, and it's actually a Danish television series.
Okay.
And so we didn't realize that at first, so we start watching, and we're like, dude, what is wrong with the audio? Like, yeah. It's not synced at all. And then we realized, oh, it's Danish, and it's dubbed over. But it's super interesting. Like we're like hooked, and you want to keep watching. It's like a post-apocalyptic thing.
Oh really?
But it's,
oh, I but think we're I also did like see that. I
furious
I
with
did
it the entire time. They keep doing the stupidest stuff, and you're like, well, you would never. But then you can't stop watching it.
I'm a huge fan of like the post-apocalyptic type stuff.
It's got a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Nice. I'll definitely have to check that out. I've been looking for like a new show to watch. So
yeah.
I play a lot of Fortnite.
Yeah, of course.
I bought the battle pack. Something I never thought I would do.
What's a battle pack? I've heard this word mentioned.
It unlocks a bunch of. It gives you like some skins and different things like that, and then it unlocks the like I guess you would call them quests or challenges each week. Okay. To get like they give you win certain things like. Cosmetic stuff, and you can get like things that allow you to gain XP faster, so like the level up, and the more you level up in the game, the more cosmetic stuff you get, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think it was like 7 or 8. It's like it wasn't much, but I was like, wow, I just did an in-game purchase. That's weird.
Your first ever
maybe not. I've done in-app purchases, like I bought some different things for different apps. Okay. On my iPhone, like edit, like photo editing apps, like I bought some like access to other tools and stuff, but I don't think it might be my first in-game purchase.
Interesting.
I'm thinking.
Does it feel worth it?
Yeah, because it's actually.
Do you feel
like
the system just beat you?
No, because it's actually fun to do the challenges.
Okay.
It just adds another level. It's like anything. It's like getting new quests, right? You know, like I don't know if you ever played WoW or any of the games where like you go to a new area and then there's like 30 new quests you can do and you're excited about it.
And when updates come and everybody's all excited about the new stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it's the same thing. So it's cool. Been playing a lot. That's pretty much all I've really been doing that in reviews. So.
Oh, nice.
So yeah.
Definitely hooked.
Yeah, Fortnite's the game. That's my game. So I never thought I'd be hooked on it, but I've been playing a lot, and it's a lot of fun. I'm playing with friends too; it's a lot of fun. So yeah. Cool. So that ends this podcast, guys. As I always say, we have our full show notes page that has everything that we talked about. So if we're talking about a story, you can click through and get even more information, and even go to the source of the story, and all of that. And if you're looking for us on all of your podcasting software, it is just Think Computers, all one word. So until next week, catch you guys later.